Welcome back to The Look and Sound of Leadership, an ongoing series of executive coaching tips designed to help you be perceived in the workplace the way you want to be perceived. I'm Tom Henschel, your executive coach, and today we're talking about tough conversations. Martin's coaching was triggered when a peer named Maribel filed a complaint against him. As a result of our very first coaching conversation, Martin had gone back to Maribel and asked her for more feedback. One message Martin heard loudly from her was, "You make me feel stupid." Martin told me he had heard that before. He said, "I make other people feel stupid. Is that something you and I could work on?" I said we could. I asked him, "What do you mean when you say you make other people feel stupid? That's such an interesting thing to know about yourself." Martin gave an aw shucks roll of his head. "I'm smart, Tom. I've always been smart. Smarter than anyone in my family. Smarter than most of my teachers. I don't know how I got this way, but it's real. And sometimes I use my smarts like a weapon. People feel stupid because I make them feel stupid. I'm not proud of it, but it's true." "So, Martin, if I were Maribel, what would I have heard?" I asked. "Oh, I was really angry about that. I still think she's 100% wrong. She chose not to record particular data. She didn't forget. She just prioritized something else. She said she would have gotten to it later, but this data is crucial to the lab running according to regulations. This is not an option she can choose. And I told her, full out." "Raised voice?" I asked. "Probably, yeah." "Physically threatening?" "Oh, no, I don't think so. I'm not a big guy anyway. I might have stomped my foot once or twice." "Martin, how would you use your smarts like a weapon against me?" I asked. He took in a breath, then, without any heat in the words, quoting himself, he said, "What's wrong with you? You know better than that. A summer intern wouldn't make that mistake," things like that. "Okay," I said. "So, if you were going to prescribe a way for you to stop making people feel stupid, but you still want to deliver an important message, what would you do differently?" He thought, and then slowly he said, "I'd have to get better control of myself. When I'm angry, I don't hide it well." "How would you get better control of yourself?" I asked. "In this instance, with Maribel, I'd probably need overnight to calm down and not be stomping my feet." He gave a little laugh. "I was literally hopping mad. In the morning, I wouldn't have been." I gave a big nod. "Okay, great. So what you're suggesting, a timeout, is actually the first of four steps in this whole process we're going to talk about." Skeptically, he asked, "There's a process for how to not make people feel stupid?" I laughed. "Well, no, it doesn't have to be that specifically. It's four actions for managing rough conversations, difficult conversations, crucial conversations, whatever you want to call it. It's a little four-step formula for getting good outcomes when strong feelings are involved." He mused. "And step one is a timeout? I might like this. What's number two?" I said, "Martin, before we move on, can I slap a label on this idea? I call this little timeout, act, don't react. This is about being intentional. Don't let your emotions hijack you into reactivity. Stop yourself. Ask yourself, what am I really upset about? Why does this matter? How might this sound to the other person? What might their side of it be? What do I get out of this besides just being pissed off? Think about your intention." As if scoring himself, he said, "Well, I do think about things like that, but not in the moment." I said, "Well, who does when we're emotional?" He smiled slyly. "What if I don't like being all rational, not reacting? I might miss being angry. But seriously, I get it. The hard part for me will be remembering to take the time out." "Right," I agreed. "It is hard to stop the hijack." He asked, "So what's number two?" I said, "Express intention. If step one is meaningful, if you really think about other people during your time out, your intention should get clear. And not only your intention, if you really imagine how your words might sound to someone else, it's pretty easy to imagine which things might be hard for them to hear. During express intention, you also get to voice your concerns. You get to say, hey, Maribel, I'm concerned this might sound like I'm criticizing you. I don't mean to. I just want to be sure we're always following regulations. Or, hey, Maribel, I know I'm not your boss, and I don't want this to sound like I'm telling you how to do your job, but I am concerned about following the regulations. I express my intention, right? I want to follow regulations, and I express my concern. I'm not trying to offend you. Continuing to keep score, he said, those are not things I usually consider. I would definitely need a timeout to figure that. Okay, what's number three? I said, be clear. Imagine that you had to turn your message into a bullet point, 12 words or less. What would the bullet point say? Be clear about what you're trying to convey. Just being upset does not create clarity. Smiling, he said, well, that's becoming clear. I went on, you might be clear about a behavior. You'd say, I'd like to talk with you about recording data. And you name it without blame. You don't get to say, hey, I want to talk to you about the mistake you're making not recording that data. He laughed. Well, you're no fun. I laughed too. Yeah, it's a bummer, right? Look, in being clear, you can also address attitudes. Maybe I'm your manager and I'm concerned about your engagement. If I can be really clear when I identify the issue, I'm way more likely to get the results I want. Tentatively, considering as he spoke, he said, with Maribel, I wanted her to follow the rules so we're in compliance. Right, I said, and that's clear. I'm not sure that's what she heard, though. Well, no, he said, obviously not. By the way, I asked, is it appropriate for you to give a peer feedback like that? Does the team normally give each other feedback? He gave a snort. We do not. I shrugged. Well, that makes the conversation even tougher, right? But expressing intention can be helpful in a moment like that. You say, hey, I know I'm not your boss, but, right? He nodded. Act, don't react, connects to express intention, which connects to be clear. That's pretty tidy. I am glad you like it, I smiled. There's one thing to be careful about with this be clear bullet point. Do not use it as a catch-all. Don't pull other situations in. Don't resurrect past incidents. Don't make accusations. You're not trying to win an argument. You're trying to be clear about one specific thing you think could be improved. He nodded. And still one more to go, right? Indeed, I said. I often think of this fourth step as a big umbrella arching over the other three. It is attend to the relationship. Attend to the relationship. One way you're going to measure the success of a tough conversation is if the relationship is no worse off afterwards than it was before. You should be able to deliver your message and maintain or build a positive relationship. Both. So when you take your time out, think about the relationship. When you express your intent and concerns, think about the relationship. When you are being clear with that bullet point, think about the relationship. Every step of the way, attend to the relationship. He said, using a relationship as a measure of success would never occur to me, and that could be really hard for me to learn. I said, well, then let me put a different lens around it and see if it helps. Let me make this fourth step a specific behavior, like the others, okay? Listen to learn. A friend of mine says there are three ways we listen to each other. We listen to win, like winning a debate. We listen to fix when we're trying to be helpful. And we listen to learn when we're genuinely curious. After you've expressed intention, after you have been clear, listen to learn. There's a story on their side and you do not know it yet. Be curious. Listen to learn. He said, you do that a lot with me. I shrugged. Well, sure. I have no idea what you're thinking, and I am curious. As a coach, I listen to learn a lot of the time. He shook his head no, saying, when I think someone's stupid, I am listening to win. There's no doubt about it. That is how I use my intelligence as a weapon. I go in to win. How do you think it would be to listen to learn? I asked. He snorted again. When I think someone should have known better, I don't want to listen to them. I want to smack them upside the head. Well, do you think you could listen to learn? I asked. Maybe, I'd have to be willing to hear their side of it. And what if it's ridiculous? Do I have to really consider it? If you think it's ridiculous, Martin, then I'd say you haven't listened to Learn yet. Well, what if I listened to Learn and then decided it was ridiculous, he asked. Well, suppose you do. What would you do next if you want to come out with the relationship as strong as when it began? With a bark of a laugh, he said, huh, maybe start over and take another time out. I feel like I'm in the slow group here. This is not easy for me. But Martin stuck with it. Almost a year later, long after the coaching had concluded, I got an email from Martin on a Monday morning. He had had a profound conversation with his teenage daughter over the weekend. He'd gone into it, applying the four steps for a tough conversation, and he came out feeling their relationship was stronger than ever. Using the four steps as his compass during a difficult conversation helped him navigate towards the look and sound of leadership. I wonder what you think of Martin. This is the fourth and final episode featuring Martin, and I've been getting a lot of feedback that people think Martin is a jerk. And I understand. I really do. In truth, he is not the easiest guy to get along with. I understand that. But I also hope that you will hear two other things. I hope you hear, especially in this episode, that Martin is willing. He went back to Maribel to get more feedback. He was willing to consider whether he did those four steps already. He listened, and each time he asked himself, do I do that? He was willing to work on himself. Is he ever going to be the warmest guy in a group? Probably not. But he was doing the hard work of changing his own thinking and changing his behavior. And by that measure, I think he's a superstar. So yay, Martin. Here's the other thing I hope you heard from Martin. The thing he was upset about recording data, it wasn't just egotistical nonsense. He was worried about the lab losing its certification if they didn't follow regulations. Now, was that a realistic concern? Like, might that really happen if Maribel doesn't record the data right? Are they really in jeopardy? To be honest, Martin was in the minority, because I asked around, because I didn't know. But the argument was not bonkers. People understood the argument. And his delivery sucked. But here's my point. I think there are times when we see ourselves just like Martin sees himself. We feel justified in our position. And yeah, we acknowledge the other person might have a reasonable position too, but they're wrong, right? I feel like I have to prove that I am right, and suddenly I am listening to win. Everything I hear goes through a filter that is getting ready to do combat. We've all been there. That's not a great way to approach a tough conversation, and it's really hard to snap out of it. It is hard to kind of say, whoops, hold on, I need a timeout. I want to repeat the list of questions that I rattled off with Martin, because if you can remember to take a timeout and really think about these questions, I believe it will change your thinking. Listen to these questions. What am I really upset about? Really? Why does it matter? How might all this sound to the other person? What might their side of it be? What do I want to get out of bringing this up? If you reflect on any one of those questions, it could take you time. If you consider all of them, you're going to have a really good time out. And it's going to make the next two steps, expressing intention and being clear, so much easier. Oh, my goodness. All right. That was a whole idea about us getting hijacked and how hard it is to notice that we've been hijacked. And if you can notice, take a time out and what do you do? I've been watching this hijack process for years, in myself and in others, and I see consistently that there is one trap that people fall into, myself included. I think it's one of the biggest hijackers, and I call it black and white thinking. I observe that black and white thinking leads us into a hijack. And then, you know, all of a sudden the emotions are all up and you're going to potentially damage the relationship. Black and white thinking to me is a root cause. So I think it's really important to learn some tools to kind of derail it. First, let me tell you how I observe black and white thinking. It's basically right, wrong thinking. You know, when I listen to you and a voice in my head gives a snort, like, huh, I'm already in black and white thinking, right? I've already decided you're wrong. Here is a really strong example to me of black and white thinking. I was talking to a manager about the way his team was experiencing him. And he said to me, look, I'd rather be known around here as a bully than a doormat. I was like, wait, are those the only two choices? I mean, it just sounded like such a false equivalency to me. But it was clearly black and white thinking, right? And I do think that we all say things like this, and they make sense to us when we say them. It's how we make sense of the world. But I think it limits us, right? I think we want to limit our black and white thinking. So here's a way that I think you can change the filter. The first step is you have to notice the dichotomy you've set up. Listen to your framework, like bully or doormat. And by the way, it could be just that other person. They're wrong, I'm right. That's a dichotomy. And neither of them are neutral. Bully and doormat aren't neutral. Right and wrong aren't neutral. They're not. So the first step to changing your filter, notice your dichotomies and try to make them neutral. So if you were going to try and turn bully and doormat into something neutral or maybe even aspirational, what would it be? Bully might be assertive. Doormat might be quiet. Maybe. So once you've noticed your dichotomy, once you've made them neutral, here's the next thing. Imagine one long line stretching out to either side of you with you standing at the midline. So there's this long continuum, right, stretching to your left and your right, and you put one of those words out at either end. So assertive goes way down to the left, quiet goes way out to the right, and you think to yourself, where am I? Am I so far down on that assertive side that I look like a little chipmunk in the distance? Or, hey, look, maybe I'm over here on the quiet side, but I'm just an arm's length away. I have a lot of both in me, so I'm right near the midline. Suddenly that's neutral, and it doesn't have the same emotional charge to it, and then you figure out, where's the other person? If I'm over there, where are they? Maybe they're near me. Maybe they're close. But it's suddenly not black and white thinking anymore because it's a continuum. Being on either side of the midline doesn't make anybody right or wrong. What it does is it de-escalates the black and white thinking, and it will help you get out of an emotional hijack. Good luck. Before we end, I want to talk about a favorite topic. Listen to learn. I will share that right after this month's gratitude. I, along with gratitude, have big news this month, but first let me start with gratitude to all of you. Throughout the month, I mean, it was an amazing number of you reached out to me after my conversation with Dave Stachowiak on his Coaching for Leaders podcast, where he and I talked about sorting and labeling. Thank you so much for all the support, all the feedback. You all were so enthusiastic. I went back and listened to it again, and you know what? It's a really good episode. I just want to say one more time, I know you, many, the longtime listeners have heard this a lot, sorting and labeling, it is not hard to learn, and it makes an astonishing difference in how people experience you as a communicator. That episode with Dave explained it really well, and it was fun. We both laughed a lot. It's good. Go listen to it. Coaching for Leaders, episode 518. Gratitude to those of you who reached out about it. Gratitude to Dave. Thanks. It's always great to talk to you. So much gratitude to you, those of you who subscribe to the HTML email every month. It is great to be in touch with you. Thank you. Those of you who reach out to me asking for coaching, and we get to talk and I get to know you a little. Thank you so much. And those of you who leave reviews for the podcast in iTunes and CastBox and other platforms, thank you. You know, in this incredibly crowded podcasting world, your reviews make a difference. Thank you so much. Gratitude this month to Inderpal Dhillon from Canada, and then from here in the U.S., Stephanie Kalka, R. Liberum, and Ritz202. I am very grateful to all of you for taking time and really grateful for what you write to me. Thank you. And finally, I just want to share some news with you. I had my first team meeting this week with the coaches and facilitators who are going to be delivering live online courses to you when our new website launches. You know, I talk with team leaders all the time about being the best leader they can be, but I don't really lead much of anything myself. But suddenly I have this team. And oh my gosh, I mean, just to name a few, we have the woman who used to be the head of global leadership development at Microsoft. We have another who was an HR leader at the Walt Disney Company for 15 years, and a colleague of mine who delivers Brené Brown's Dare to Lead course, who, by the way, was personally trained by Brené Brown. We have a performer and a teacher from the world-famous Groundlings Theater. That's really their name, the world-famous Groundlings Theater. The Groundlings turned out the likes of Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig, and this guy is one of the teachers there. I am so grateful to these people. It's only a few of them, by the way. I've known them all a long time, and they are coming together to help you in your development. We're going to do live online courses with limited participant numbers. These are not webinars. They are going to be great, so stay tuned. Okay, that's gratitude. Last tool, listen to learn. A few years ago over breakfast, my friend Mindy Dana mentioned this model in the part of a bigger conversation. She works with a group called Cultivating Leadership, which is an amazing human development company. And she just said, oh, we use this model. And the instant I heard her, I said, wait, back up. What was that? Could you tell it to me again? Ever since that morning, I've been sharing it with clients and with the people that I mentor. Everyone, almost without fail, comes back and tells me something about that tool. They all use it a little differently, but what I've come to understand is it is a really sticky tool, it's really simple, and it is a really helpful way to track your own listening. So let me name the three modes of listening again. Listen to win, listen to fix, and listen to learn. Here's the idea. We do all three of these all the time. We just aren't really conscious about it. And none of them are inherently bad, but they have different purposes and they have different impacts on others. So let me tell you what each one might sound like. Let's start with listen to win. Here's what that might sound like. You're wrong. You don't understand. Can't you see? That's ridiculous. That's not possible. Can you hear listen to win in those? And listen, I want to be clear. Listening to win is not a bad thing. If resources are scarce and you have the chance to get something for your team, I hope you listen to win and I hope you do win. And the same if you're in a tough negotiation, I hope you listen to win and I hope you do win. But I also hope that you are attending to the relationship. And those ones that you just heard are not really helpful for the relationship, but I think it's what listening to win often sounds like in yourself and in others. Here's listen to fix. Have you thought of doing this? You're going to call her back, right? You know what you should have done. Hey, did you ever think about trying XYZ? I mean, can you hear listen to fix in those? I have an idea, and it's intended to be helpful, and I'm trying to fix your problem. And sometimes that is exactly what we ask of each other. Sometimes that's why you call on someone. It's like, hey, will you help me think about this? It's not always a bad thing, but I also think that a lot of us do it when it is not asked for. So be conscious of listen to fix. And then there's listen to learn. Okay, so imagine being a kid and finding something that interests you, whatever it is, tropical reefs, formulas, a game. When you are a kid and you find something that hooks you, there is no end to your curiosity. And that is when you listen to learn. You ask questions just because you want to know more. You aren't judging what you hear because it's all new and all unexpected. You assess it later, but in the moment, you're just drinking it in. It sounds like that's interesting. Oh, it sounds like that could be scary. How was that for you? And then what? How do you make sense of that? And after you say those things, you listen to learn more. I wonder how often you're in that mode, especially leaders who have a lot of pressure on them. I think it's really hard to do. I wonder, could you? I mean, even if you were just chatting with someone about their weekend, could you listen to learn? Maybe during your one-on-ones, could you listen to learn at dinner with your family? Could you listen to learn? I think it's a hard muscle to develop, but oh my gosh, it is so powerful. Especially, by the way, when you are in a tough conversation and the emotions are strong. If you want to gain some skills for those situations, take a look in the episode library. Use the search filters, communication skills, management skills, relationship skills. There will be lots in there for you. If you want behavior coaching and self-management tips, here are five episodes you might listen to. Combating Emotional Hijacks, The Conflict Conversation, a difficult conversation, short sounds confident, and smoothing harsh edges. Those are all in the show notes, but they're also all in the library on the Essential Communications website, essentialcom.com. It's essentialcom with two M's.com. Hit the podcast button. There you are. Help yourself. While you're there, hit the contact button. Say hi. It's always nice to hear from you. All right, that's it from me. Until next time, I'm Tom Henschel. Thanks so much for listening.